Tuesday Topics is chosen by the people who attend Tuesday Topics. If you'd like to join us for Tuesday Topics, come to the Politics Room at ourplace.acbradio.org at 9 Eastern on Tuesdays. That's 1 UTC Wednesdays.
A very warm welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Dave Williams. Owing to technical difficulties experienced by our recorders, the first few minutes of this week's programme are unavailable. This is the third and final part in Tuesday Topics mini-series exploring blindness and sexuality. And as promised last week, this week the programme concerns the act itself. What follows is a full and frank discussion of blindness and sexuality, and listener discretion is advised. So we hand it over now to Paul Edwards, who poses a question regarding sexual fantasy.
I'd like to ask a question, because it seems to me that we're making those of us who are blind seem awfully lame and incompetent. And it seems to me that a lot of us have pretty fertile imagination sexually. Often may have fairly detailed fantasies. Very often may be extremely creative about setting up scenarios that we might get involved with our partner. And I would suggest to you that in some ways our scenarios might actually be better because they would be so multi-channeled. That is, they wouldn't rely on vision, but instead would focus on a much broader sensorium of experience. So I don't know what people think about that, but I guess I'm sort of surprised to hear people say, on the one hand, that we lack the visual stimulation, but almost on the other hand, seeming to suggest that we don't do a good job of creating an environment that is erotically satisfying for our partners. And I don't think that's the case.
Paul, this is Jesus again. I hope I don't know that I ever. I mean, at least I don't think that at all. I think, and I have been informed by sighted women, I believe myself to be quite imaginative and quite accomplished at more than quote-unquote straight nothing imagination type of erotica. I think what at least I am saying is that, in my opinion, as with the majority of the sighted world, quote-unquote, we find ourselves finding it very difficult sometimes to obtain ideas and material, and in particularly since we are not able to obtain the pictorial material, some of us, and I have run into this, have basically given up and may not be aware of all that is out there.
This is Sean, and on some extent I do agree that, you know, sometimes you don't have ideas. I think I understand what Paul is saying in the sense that I may be able to think of a more interesting scenario, at least in my mind, fantasy in my mind, than a sighted person is, because I'm thinking about, you know, not just what things look like, what kind of place am I in, what do certain things feel like. But I think part of it is the reason that doesn't get expressed, even if we have such thoughts and elaborate things going on. Maybe we're afraid that because other people are so visual that they're not going to understand, you know, why a certain thing is intriguing to us, that, you know, for them, they just may, all they might care about is what it looks like, but for, you know, maybe we don't quite know how to make them understand. I don't know if I'm hitting on anything or not.
It's Debbie again. I would agree. I think it's probably a trust issue. I think it goes back to some of those messages that I know I talked about last week in terms of, you know, don't touch or take the first you find or whatever, and not being used to expressing some of those. And you know, maybe if the other person isn't expressing a lot of that, well, then that just may also make it, you know, kind of a guessing game. But I didn't hear any actual blame going on.
This is Asus again. After I say this, I promise I am going to shut up. Want to throw this out as a warning. Okay, both of the sites so far that have been mentioned, Literotica and Nifty, do not be surprised if you run into some material there that you personally may find objectionable or just very odd, because it is there. So be aware of that before you go to those sites.
This is Jeff from Australia. I believe personally that a person's need for greater or less amounts of sensuality or you know, conversely, sort of, you know, physical activity, I think is a very individual thing, and I really don't think sight's got anything to do with it. In the things that I've read, the conversations I've had with people, you know, I definitely get a feeling that the range of desires in this area vary very much from person to person, rather than being dependent at all on sight or lack of it.
I think that it's time to perhaps refocus, because we're getting sort of stuck in an area where we could probably go around in circles a lot. Let's go to another whole issue with regard to intercourse, and that is to explore perhaps a little bit whether blind people tend, as a whole, to experience sex on their own as much as others do. I'm not sure that anybody's ever done very much about asking the question, and it's certainly one way of getting sexual satisfaction.
This is Shelley. I can't speak for all of us, but for me, yes. I've thought about this since the first discussion we had, and Debbie mentioned it, and she mentioned that she was doing it at a very early age, and I was too. And, of course, being caught at it, oh, my goodness, that was such a no-no. And I was left real early on with a sense of how bad it was to do that. It didn't really stop me, at least not when I was quite young. And even having listened to and read therapists who said it's not only not bad, but it's very good for you, there always has been that sense of, I really shouldn't do it. You know, there's that sense of negativism that's attached to it, and it really shouldn't be that way.
I've discussed this with a lot of people, and it seems to me that in particular blind men are very experienced and have a lot of knowledge, and I know a lot of people would say that's true for men in general, and it is, but I think particularly so for blind men, and I'd be kind of interested to hear anybody's opinions about whether they agree with that and why that might be.
This is Jesus. I don't know that I would say that's... I mean, I don't know if it would be more often or more common among blind men than amongst the general population. I have always found it hard to believe, and I know there are people out there who do not. I have found experience-wise that women who acknowledge to me that they engage in masturbation quite regularly, as a rule, make the better lovers. Whether that also holds true for women with men, or for gay men with other men, or for gay women with other women, I don't know. I find it to be a very healthy, very acquired part of the whole.
This is Sean, and I do too, and I agree a lot with what people said, that it's a good thing and that it's needed. Yeah, it's definitely something that is important, but like Jesus said, I know somebody who just doesn't do it, and I'm saying to him, you know, how can you go you know, that that doesn't make, compute with me.
I find it interesting, and I guess I'm going to be indulgent and deal with my question. Very often when sighted people masturbate, they have a vision in their mind. That is, they'll often look at a picture, men from Playboy often, women perhaps looking at other things. I'm not quite sure because I'm not one of them. But perhaps somebody would talk to me a little bit about whether there is another approach that blind folks take that helps them to center what they're doing.
For me, a lot of what I think about, it sort of goes back to what Debbie was saying. A lot of what I think about is the situation that I would want to be in, that be including the people that, you know, and it's, of course, it's often people you know that you would want it to be with, where that would be, the what you would be hearing, you know, what would you be saying, what would they be saying, what would you be doing. It's a whole, it's basically pictured in your mind, but without the picture.
This is Jeff from Australia again. Certainly I find two things I tend to draw on for the most part are personal experiences, you know, thinking about things that I've done in the past, and visualizing, for wanting a better word, the characters or situations in stories that I've read. And in that particular case, ones that go into a fair amount of detail, and they tend to be the better written stories anyway, can provide good source material. Though there are times when a description of someone from, you know, a variety of sources, you know, it might even just be sort of a small comment about someone's appearance or something.
Why don't I jump in on this one? I guess the one thing that you get that I don't think anybody's really talked about that is certainly a part of my imaging is imagining someone I may know but have had no sexual relationship with, imagining perhaps that I am having such, and that kind of anticipation.
Yeah, I think that's a good fantasy.
Paul, that's exactly what I meant. I guess didn't state it as eloquently as you did. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's interesting. I could elaborate on that and say I have done that, but a lot of times my storylines, and I don't know why this is, do not involve me. They involve other people altogether. Sometimes people I know, but sometimes just people I make up as I go along. Usually the storyline is, I've had occasions, though, when I guess I get in a kind of a, well, I guess a weird mood is the only way to put it, and the storyline could turn negative. And so I often kind of shy away from that sort of thing.
It's something I'm a little careful with, though, because I don't want to kind of turn it into some kind of sexual obsession for that person, because I don't want to make things complicated.
I think that's a real key, though, is to expand on those thoughts. And there are times that I've done that, and it's worked really well for me. And then there are other times that I have just not done that, maybe been too caught up in my own head. But I think that's real important.
This is Jesus again. I think that, yeah, I think with both people you know, at least with me, people I know, people that I just make up, but with people I know, I again, because so much of it plays, for me at least, in my head as a storyline, I particularly, as Paul said earlier, like to imagine people that I know but may never be in any kind of a sexual situation with.
Hi, this is Don in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. With a closeted gay man who's 35, a sighted guy, and his straight coworker who's 34. And the conversation was about gay porn for blind people. And I said, if I had a friend visit me, and he said, oh, do you have any gay porn? And so it was running in the background. Was he looking at the screen? Was he listening to the sounds that all of us would listen to? Or was he preoccupied with me? Or in what ratio was the combination? What's interesting is that the straight woman said, it's not that he's not inattentive to you. I'm sure he was. But that I said, oh, but because he was attentive to me, I thought he was hearing the porn. She said, my guess is that he still was watching it, that there was still a visual stimulation there.
To what extent do people make use of sex toys? There's certainly a huge market out there for them. But I guess the internet makes it a little bit easier, but in the past, I think it was often perhaps a little difficult for blind people to get hold of sex toys, and maybe that was an issue in terms of how widely they were used. But maybe some comments on whether sex toys have a place in lovemaking for folks who are blind, and what sort of experiences we've had with them and with acquiring them.
I find it difficult because I don't know that much about them. The one I had was very simple. And like you say, there is such a huge market. And looking at them on a couple of websites, I don't know what I'm buying. I'd find it interesting if someone was marketing them. I guess what I'm saying, and then having a hard time saying, is I kind of like to look at it before. I want to know what I'm buying.
Yeah, this is leading on to the comment that I was going to make. Yes, getting hold of them was a lot easier. Yeah, you don't have to try and find the little shops tucked discreetly down side alleys in the seedier parts of town, and you don't have to ask somewhat embarrassedly, a cab driver or a friend to take you to them when you can order them discreetly online. But there is the issue of knowing exactly what some of these things are and how you use them and what they're used for, and that's something that's been a little bit of an issue for me. I've looked at some of the stuff, and it seems fairly straightforward as to what you would do with it. And, if I needed something or wanted something like that, and presuming that I can afford it, I would have no scruples in buying it. But there are other things that I really don't know exactly what they're for and how you would go about using it. And I think the only real way to deal with that, because of course you can't look at any pictures, it would be to actually go to one of these aforementioned stores, and there is obviously the issues of getting to them, and I think once you got to them you wouldn't have too much trouble. I think, obviously by the nature of their work you'd have fairly open-minded people working in these places, and I wouldn't think it would be too difficult for them to find someone who would explain the use of them, but there would be the issue of getting to them and finding them in the first place.
Well, it's Debbie again. I have been a few times to stores, and I've always gone with a friend, or I once went with a boyfriend who was also blind. I think the thing is now, I know all my paratransit drivers, I think I'd feel really funny. I have to tell you, I consider myself one of those blind people that, have you ever had the experience where you're suddenly in a situation and you know that you are just so lucky because you're somewhere that you know a lot of people aren't fortunate enough to have been? Well, I'm one of those people sometimes. Back in 1979 or 80, there were these sex parties. They were called Tupperware parties. But what they were like Tupperware parties, only they sold sex toys. And if a person wanted to have one of those parties, they would find somebody that actually held those parties, just like Tupperware or makeup or whatever. And they would invite their friends, and the person would come over and sell all these different toys. And so it was in a house, and it was discreet. It wasn't, one of those crazy stores. So you could really, get to touch all the different items, the different vibrators, the different lingerie, that you could smell. They'd pass around all these different things you could smell and taste, and different coffee cups and, all kinds of stuff that were different shapes. And whoever, I hosted a party, so I got 10% of what the party all the money that people bought things. Then years later, at one point, I went to a party like that that was just for women, women with women partners. And I think there might have even been a third party that I went to that was another house party like that. And now I haven't heard of them in several years. But that is, you know, I think that's a really neat way to get to know what's out there. I haven't bought any of that from the internet. I've even wondered about going on certain sites and being, you know, having cookies put in my computer. And, you know, I've been leery about some of that. But also you don't get to... You know, not all vibrators are created equal. You know, you don't know how they're going to sound or how they're going to feel in intensity or anything else. So it's a lot different to get to kind of hear them and touch them and all that.
This is Jesus Garcia again. Through all the years that I have been surfing the web and looking at this different types of materials, I have been very pleasantly surprised at how many people in this area end up being quite friendly and quite accommodating, particularly once you send an email saying, listen, I'm blind and I can't access your website for reason A, B, or C. 99% of the times what I have gotten back is, how do you want me to change the website, or what can I do to make it so that you can access it? And we're not talking about paid sites here. Most of the good reputable sites have an 800 number, and if there is something in the description that you just can't gel, because obviously you can't see the picture, if you call them, they'll be more than happy to talk to you and explain to you what the toy does, what it looks like, what it its power requirements, if there are any, are. Before the internet came along, I met a lady and her partner who were hosting a bulletin board, if anybody remembers what those were, down here in South Florida, called the Mansion BBS, Adults Bulletin Board. And I became friendly enough with them that I ended up actually maintaining and hosting a good part of that site for a number of years. So, yes, you do have to be careful, because unfortunately, God knows sometimes where you go, what can be put on your computer and what is tracking. And I certainly would be very, very cautious about giving just any site a credit card number or other forms of identification. But having said that, I have found it very pleasant to find that a lot of these people are quite friendly.
This discussion has actually been interesting. I'd like to add just two very quick points. First, the Adult Toy Chest also has some pages that actually describe in quite a lot of detail what many of the devices do. Not by any means all of them, but many of them. And one of the things that I'd also like to suggest is that, yeah, there are an awful lot of devices out there for men, which are intended to heighten the experience and also are intended sometimes to prevent it from coming to an end prematurely. So there's actually lots of stuff out there, and probably the most widely thought of sex aid that's anywhere right now is Viagra, and that's typically not used by women, I don't think.
Jesus Garcia, 2 points as far as the party goes, count me in. I don't see any reason why not. And I'm about to make a statement with which I would be interested to see if the gay men and women would agree with or disagree with me on this. Particularly for men, I think that is one area where gay men have a major advantage over most of us straight, quote-unquote, guys, only because so many straight guys, in my opinion, from what I've heard in conversation, gets so hung up on the fact that, oh no, toys do something to my macho image. And unfortunately, they're missing one hell of a nice experience.
You almost took the words right out of my mouth. This is Sean. I think in the gay community, it's a lot more acceptable to use toys to make things different. I think that makes sense.
It's Debbie again. Need I even say my name? At my party, I think there were men there. There were
particularly in what used to be called blue-collar guys. This is not, especially if the toy has any type of penis shape, immediately it begins to trigger in many straight guys the gay phobia. And again, it's unfortunate because they're missing some really interesting experiences. I just want to add one other thing, and Paul, feel free to jump in here and agree or disagree with me on this, but it sounds to me from hanging around here for 2 hours tonight that this is a topic that we could go on and on and on forever and ever and never exhaust. I would ask that we maybe repeat this in another couple of months, or if not on here, maybe in another chat room that people could get together and just chat.
About male sex aids. My understanding is that these things do exist, and Amanda tells me that there's some authority that they do, but in the same breath wasn't able to tell me what they were called, and I think that just highlights the point that I'm about to make, which is that I think there's a much greater cultural awareness of the sex aids for women. You know, most people at some point are made aware of what dildos and vibrators are and all this sort of stuff, whereas, you know, I mean, you know, I think that the times that we hear about, you know, sex aids for women, it's a reasonably positive thing, you know, whatever. But the only time we ever hear about, you know, sex aids for men is, you know, sort of disparaging references to things like the fact that a man might have a, you know, a blow-up doll, for example. They tend to be referred to in a fairly sort of, you know, well, he's not good enough to get a real woman, so he's going to put up with a, you know, blow-up doll. And I think maybe that's part of the reason why we don't really hear much about the rest of these things, because they just generally don't get good press.
I would agree with Jeff, I think. I think he's absolutely right that there is a greater cultural awareness, you know, and we can belabor this point for a long time, and we can talk about sex aids and how they can be useful, you know, in certain respects. But let's be honest, I don't think they're a substitution. They're a simulation, but they're certainly not a substitution, you know, for the reality. They might teach you about the physical aspect of how to become, you know, aroused or what to do, but, you know, there are so many other issues that surround sex, and maybe we've explored, you know, maybe we've just scratched the surface in the last couple of weeks, but I don't think we can really underestimate the point that while we may talk about, you know, sex aids and that they may have a function, that, you know, certainly in most cases, and I would venture to say in all cases, you know, they're merely, you know, a poor substitute for the reality. And I think if anyone is going to think that they can use a sex aid, you know, in the same way that, you know, that they would interact with a human being, then they're sadly mistaken.
Wow, you guys got lots of topics here. I hope I can make the 3 points. This is Don in Pennsylvania, gay male. I think a couple of things. It does not surprise me one moment at all that women would be more likely to have adult toy parties in the gay community. They were popular. They were popular in the 70s and 80s. I think that what actually happened is that technology caught up with reality. And so actually, no, you're not going to be able to touch them, Debbie. You're not going to be able to feel them. You're not going to be able to smell them. But that a lot of the adult toys that are out there are more available to blind people through the internet than they actually were through household parties in a Tupperware simulated environment. I also would say that I think that women and sex toys, straight men think, well, that's right, and that's right, and they don't have us, and they don't have the real thing, and the next best thing is, so I agree with the person preceding me. And then you take it to a gay level, and of course it's an insertion device in almost every instance. And so I can see why the gay community is very aware of toys, and they are. And I would rather use the word enhancement, because they're not
replacing the person, but they are an enhancement to climax, to sexual activity, to the sexual experience, and maybe a wider range of what social norms may be. So I would put it in that realm too. And then I can very much understand that the straight male, other than visual, other than porn, other than pictures, other than magazines, he's probably going to be pretty reluctant to quote sex toys, unquote, because I am there for her. And my machismo says I am all she needs, whether that be far from the truth or not.
Hi, it's Debbie again. I'm going to have to go in a few minutes, but I just want to say, Dave, I don't think that our discussion has strayed as much as it may seem, and I don't think that we're saying that toys are a substitute for the real thing. I think that toys, as Don was saying, are ways of enhancing, and I think when adults can play with toys together, I mean, when someone can use a toy on me or show me what toys to use with them, I mean, that is just another layer of intimacy, another aspect of getting much further with something that can often seem like a very difficult communication. I mean, I just think it can be so freeing, so fun. And I think that the fact that we've had more people on this show in the last few weeks says that there's such a hunger to have this kind of discussion. And it's a kind of discussion that we often don't get in the sighted world and maybe don't even always have with each other. So I think it says that there's a real need, whether we're talking about toys or whether we're talking about, and I think it is all part of intercourse. I mean, I think we're a lot closer to the real substance of topics here than we were last week talking about, I don't know, appearance or clothes or whatever, which may also have aspects. I mean, I have a friend, a very close friend, who's a sexologist. And some people might think, oh, that's funny. Sexologist, what does she do? Well, she helps people have sex. But, you know, 99% of what she talks about with people is relationship issues, because she reminds people all the time that the most important part of what is the most important sex organ for anyone is what's between the ears, the brain. So, you know, it's all that relationship stuff. And I think for us, it is more complicated. It doesn't mean that it's impossible or that it doesn't work. It really does have more layers of complexity. So I think this has been very good. I'm glad that we've had these few weeks. And I am always willing to continue on this kind of discussion if anyone wants to talk further with me or, you know, have me involved in a discussion, leading a discussion or anything of that nature. I'm really happy to do that. I'm going to sign off for tonight, and I'll see you all next week.
You can enhance activities with toys, but I think there's also the issue of when the real thing is not available for whatever of a reason, you know, sometimes there isn't the opportunity for sex. Sometimes you're in a situation where you're, like I am at the moment, where you're a long way from your partner and you have to try and, in some ways it's important to make things as sexual as you can when there isn't that, opportunity for contact, because you need to satisfy that spark. When you're not in a relationship, there may not be the opportunities for either casual sex or, services that you might pay for. And there are a whole raft of issues with the ability to make contact with people, take part in the art of seduction and stuff like that. And I don't know whether that's been covered in previous weeks. I think that could be a whole night of discussion on its own, I suspect.
There were two things that I wanted to say. Paul, I want to thank you for taking on this subject, because I think it has become somewhat of a taboo within the blind community. Not necessarily within the blind community, but I think perhaps there is a perception that, you know, blind people don't have sex or blind people don't talk about sex. So I want to thank you for the mature and responsible way that you have taken this on within the context of Tuesday Topics. Also, I think it may be useful, and I don't want to detract from any future programs that you may have in mind, but I think it may be useful for ACB Radio to have some kind of ongoing discussion, because I think what these three programs have done is to open a can of worms, and that there is a huge volume of material that needs to be explored, discussed, exposed, for want of a better word, about the way in which blind people or people with disabilities deal with sex. And I think, you know, some kind of ongoing discussion may be useful. I don't know if that takes the form of a monthly program or a weekly program or how that works. And somebody like Debbie, you know, particularly seems to be fairly well adjusted and comfortable with discussing this subject. So I'd like to throw that out there. You know, if somebody would like to take this on in terms of a more long-term series, I'm not sure that we want to hijack Tuesday Topics, because clearly, you know, after 45 shows, you know, you guys have any number of subjects to discuss, but that's certainly, you know, on the table, as you know, as far as I'm concerned, if people want to discuss that further. So thanks all, thank you everyone.
Don from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I too, Paul Edwards, I commend you for this topic. And I understand not having Tuesday Topics being taken over, but I hope that the numbers, and I hate to say that numbers mean everything, but as a moderator for the Rainbow Room on For the People, a forum for gay blind people to talk about all of these issues specific to gay men, and here we are opening up the blind gay men, and we're talking about blind gay or blind people here. I think the fact that it's hard for the sighted world to understand blind people being sexual, I think it's very important for blind people to talk about being sexual, the diversity of sexuality, and what that means. And yes, I'm promoting it because I'm saying that there's homophobia in the blindness community. But my main goal is to say that I would like to see blind people being equal to sighted people in sexuality in general. I don't think they are. I don't think we're where they are. I don't think we still, with the advent of technology, have the same options available to us, the same stimuli. I think that the gap might be margined, it might be bridged, but it is no way an equal platform to date.
At the risk of being a Me Too person, I'd like to also thank Paul Edwards for tackling this topic. I don't know whether he got any slings and arrows thrown in his direction as a result of it, but he certainly well could have. Unfortunately, technology didn't allow us to get to the first 2 weeks, and that's the reason why we've joined at this late stage, is because we found we were able to. I did listen to yesterday's program, which was the first week, and found it fascinating. Would have loved to have been there, and I'll be tuning in to listen to last week's discussion next week. And so, yeah, hopefully be able to get to more Tuesday Topics, and we'll try and get it happening locally so we don't have to make Namaste up till 4 o'clock in the morning in Tel Aviv to make this happen.
I guess I'd like to reiterate Debbie's point that I think that very often sex toys can be immensely liberating for couples, in that they can provide some variety, but also I really believe that they can create some very different sensations and experiences that you simply wouldn't get with plain, ordinary, pardon the expression, common or garden sex. I think tonight has really been a very interesting Tuesday Topics. I think we've covered a wide range of subjects. I'd like to express my appreciation to everyone who participated tonight. I'd like to thank those folks who listened on the side. I hope that in future programs you will try to become more involved. We'd love to hear your point of view as well. I think that in the last 3 weeks, we have indeed discovered that there is a gold mine of information out there from blind people about the ways that blind people interact and relate with one another. I think that someone who suggested we could go on doing this for a very long time is correct. I believe that for the sake of the one or two people in ACB who may not think continuously about sex, that we ought not to do this on Tuesday Topics next week. I think three programs in a row are probably sufficient. I'm going to tell the audience of this program that next week's program will not be on sex. Well, I won't tune in then. Okay. But I think that in a few months, there are certainly other topics that we can discuss. And it appears that a regular cyclical discussion of some of these issues may be really helpful on Tuesday Topics. And we can certainly come back to it. I'm not at all averse to discussing sex on Tuesday Topics again, and even relatively soon. I think, though, that we're in danger of losing our audience if we devote more than three shows in a row to a topic that some people actually might find offensive. I don't know if they will or not. I have no idea. Maybe I'll get a communications award from ACB for unlocking taboo subjects. But I guess it's more a gut feeling than anything else that three shows in a row on one topic is probably as much as the market ought to be asked to bear at this point. I would be comfortable in doing a show even 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now on the very issue that was discussed, that is blind versus blind, blind versus sighted, and what differences there are, because I think that really is a topic that can fill a whole hour, and I think there's some real debate. And this time, though, I'd like it to go beyond sex to actually talk about relationships and how those work, because I think it's relationships that are perhaps most important there. So that's the second point. The third point is I would be very interested in hearing a suggestion for a topic from the group who's still here for next week that isn't sexual. And by the way, I can be outvoted by the group. I mean, if the group says we ought to continue with sex next week, I'm the moderator. I don't choose the topics. And those who've been here on Tuesday Topics from the beginning know that generally I don't get nearly as involved as I did tonight in terms of choosing the topic. And as I say, I can be overruled. So suggestions or thoughts?
Paul, I agree. I think we should revisit the subject, but I think maybe a break would be in order. Just if for no other reason, to give us a chance to think about it for a while and maybe come up with some new discussion. As far as a topic for next week, I can't really think of one.
And it is down in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And two comments, I'll backtrack. The first from the one who was just speaking. I think that you can talk a topic to death. However, the one aspect that wasn't really covered was when the partner is sighted, whether they're male or female, or whether both partners are blind, and what that relationship dynamic turns out to be. That I don't know if that can necessarily be a topic to sort of summarize this topic in the first four-part series or not, but I certainly think it is a topic that, since the interest is here, shouldn't necessarily be tabled too awfully long. And then I'm going to just backtrack 1 second to talk to the previous gentleman. And I think that it was very important that Sean was here. I think that it was very important that I was here. I think that blindness and sexuality is a topic that is very important. And yes, I have to admit that one of the reasons that I participated in this series was because within the blind community, the acknowledgement that blind gay people exist, don't exist, is a real tough issue. Not trying to be in someone's face, but by the same time to recognize and deserve that acknowledgement is a purpose and a goal. And it is an individual decision. It may have been more, it might have felt more directed towards you. I think that the host of the program The receptance of blindness and sexuality at large on Tuesday Topics was a very well-rounded and diverse discussion and represented topic.
What does happen in the first weekend of September here in the United States is Labor Day. I think it might be interesting to talk about not unemployment, but employment, and particularly upward mobility and unions, because that's a lot of what Labor Day celebrates. I don't know how much happens in Australia and the UK with regard to unions, but I think it would be accurate to say that, were the truth told, in this country, one of the biggest impediments to the employment of people who are blind in the U.S. is the trade union movement. And I think it's really time that we talk some about it and begin to at least make more people aware of it, so we can see if we can crystallize into some kind of movement forward. Ladies and gentlemen, I've enjoyed moderating this discussion. I'd like to thank all of you for your patience, and I'd like to thank all of those who listened on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community. Thanks for tuning in, and good night. Next on Tuesday Topics, we're going to discuss trade unions and employment and how they've dealt with people with disabilities in general, with blind people in particular. This is actually a major issue. In the United States recently, we have seen a number of workers dismissed by the federal government who worked at the Rehabilitative Services Administration. To what degree did unions effectively help these individuals? Do unions encourage the employment of blind people by companies, or discourage it? What has their role been? Because Labor Day is happening soon in the United States, this seems to me and to the rest of the group to be a timely topic for us to discuss. I hope you'll join us when trade unions and their role with the employment of people who are blind is the next subject on Tuesday Topics. Be a timely topic for us to discuss. I hope you'll join us when trade unions and their role with the employment of people who are blind is the next subject on Tuesday Topics.